indeed. Good morning and welcome, everyone, to Live Dharma Sunday for December 2nd, 2012. Koyo Kubota here. Glad you joined us. I wanted to start off with just telling you a couple of days ago, today's Sunday, and then on Friday afternoon, we had a memorial service here at Bright Dawn in Coarse Gold, which is north of Fresno, and our family wanted to do a memorial service, and about a dozen of them drove up from the Los Angeles area, about a five-hour drive, and it was their mother's 49th day service, which is traditionally done. Japanese Buddhist tradition, and then the first year service for the father combined. Memorial service tradition is a nice tradition observed in particularly in the Japanese Buddhist tradition, where they have different rituals of, in the old days they used to have even more involved sequence of first, seventh day, second, seventh day after someone passed away. They would hold a special service. Then the 49th day, and then sometimes the 100th day. I guess it's a time to remember the interconnections with the loved one. And how interdependent our lives are with family and so forth. So they came, and this particular family, we were very close to our family because we were all in Chicago, and our families grew up together. Our mothers were best friends. Those parents had five children, and the three older boys, the oldest one was about my age, so we went on vacations together, and at the service a couple of days ago, one of the sons told a story about how he remembered that we went on a family vacation together, and maybe I was about 10 years old, and I was playing with the oldest boy, and then there's the two younger boys. One was about 2 years younger than me, and then another one about 4 years younger. So I'm 10, and then there's a 8 and a 6-year-old. And as he told a story, it was a very touching story. Our two families were on vacation in Michigan or Wisconsin together, and we stopped. We're in a park, and me and the older boy wanted to play a catch with the baseball, and so the other two younger boys, his brothers, tagging along, and my mom says, "Son, you watch, the two younger ones, make sure, keep an eye on them." So we went to play catch, and then after a while, the younger ones sort of got bored, and they went back to where the parents were sitting. Two moms were talking together. And since they went back, me and the other boy who were playing catch went back, and we were sweaty and everything. And the two younger boys were behind the mothers. They didn't see them, I guess. And so my mom saw us come, me and the older boy come back, walking back, and he says, "Son," my mom said, "Son, where's so-and-so? In fact, I tell you to watch them." She didn't know that they were standing right behind her. So as the story was being told, he said, "Well, son," and just raised his hand and pointed right at his mom. And then she turned around and said, "He's pointing behind me," and saw the two boys. And okay. It was a little moment of panic of, "Hey, I told you to watch the two younger boys, and where are they?" And that started a conversation between the two mothers of what would happen if something happened to one of them and what would happen to their children, their young children? Would they be taken care of? You know, this is a time when minorities, they're not, you know, they have to take care of themselves as families, and they have to rely on friends, not social service agencies. So they were made a plan, and this one of the sons, you know, was sitting there, and he overheard all this. I don't remember this at all, but he was saying that the mother said, "Okay, if something happens to me, well, you try to see if you could find a home for my young children, and I'll do the same for you. And if, you know, they have to work out the details, well, try to keep them together. And if a family wouldn't take both of them together, well, then we wouldn't split the children up, and we would raise them ourselves, take them in, and then so and so." And so, you know, I had a younger sister and an older brother. My older brother, I guess, was in high school, and they said, "Well, if my mom something happened to her, then my older brother would stay with my dad." Because they were concerned, you know, he was in high school, and they could be good company for each other. But then me and my younger sister, okay, would have to be taken care of. So they were working out the details just in case, to give themselves a peace of mind in case of emergency, you know. And, of course, the boy that one of the sons was telling the story, afterwards he asked his mom, "Are you going to die, Mom?" You know, is Mrs. Kubosa going to die? He said, no, we're just thinking. He goes, oh. And, you know, it shows how these kind of stories come out in family memorial services. You know, you could have a memorial service in a lot of families. A lot of people do it at the temple. But some families have it at a home in their own, you know. And it's so intimate and cozy, and everybody's, you know, so warm. And it's the setting is tremendous bonding opportunity where stories get told, and, you know, lives are honored, celebrated in a way, and it's really a richness in life. And I advocate memorial services, you know, for your family, loved ones, and it's a time to get together and to reflect, okay, on the karmic influences, and you might say it's just recounting all kinds of memories and stuff, but it's really a way in which you broaden your perspective, okay, beyond your own individual life as separate from other people and, you know, family and friends. You see the interconnections with lives, and that seeing that kind of interconnection, that's the core of Buddhist and Eastern philosophy. Innen, it's called in Japanese term. Samuprapaktimadi in the ancient Pali Buddhist language. It means cause and effect. It means interactions. It means interdependency. You know, the causes and conditions that of the whole world, of any individual life. How you cannot see one life and not see the influence of a lot of other lives. Okay? And that was one of the key components of Shakyamuni Buddha's enlightenment. Really seeing that. And it goes to the core of, what's it all about? Who am I? Well, on that note, I'm going to segue to our guest today, to December 2nd. And Bodhi Day, Enlightenment Day, is December 8th, you know, in the Mahayana tradition, you know, when Shakyamuni Buddha sat under what came to be called the Bodhi tree. Bodhi, of course, is the word for wisdom. Came to be called the wisdom tree because he sat in meditation under this tree after 6 years of searching spiritual path, and he just sat down and said, hey, this is it. So our Dharma Glimpse guest today is Charlene Soyo of Chicago. And in fact, she grew up at the Reverend Gil Nicomosa, the temple he started in Chicago. And she was primarily, their family was involved in Girl Scouts quite heavily and so forth, because that church was not only a religious center, but a social community center, particularly for our Japanese American population after the World War II, and they needed a kind of social cultural center. Okay. Not so much anymore. It's changing, of course, more toward maintaining everything, but still trying to be more religiously educational and so forth as people got assimilated. Okay. Well, Charlene Soyo, she was also part of our Lay Minister 4 group. She's doing great work in Chicago, Dharma work. So, Charlene Soyo Sensei.
This Saturday, December 8th, is Bodhi Day, the day that Shakyamuni became the Buddha, the Awakened One. Rather than thinking about what or how the Buddha taught, I've been reflecting on what Shakyamuni did to awaken. He lived, and then he listened. In Shin Buddhism, listening is how we cultivate the mud, life. From our mud, our life experiences, whether pleasant, painful, or neutral, through listening, gratitude, like the lotus, naturally arises. For the founder, Shinran Shonin, more than saying the Nembutsu, an expression of gratitude, he felt transcendence occurs when we hear it, when we listen deeply. After 35 years of doing things in his life as a prince and as an ascetic, Shakyamuni stopped doing. Under the Bodhi tree, he stopped moving so he could hear his life. This listening took place within his awareness at a depth, where just like deep waters, there is only stillness, beneath the detachment of analytical thought and agitation of emotional reactions. In this place of awareness, and stillness and solitude, where no divisions of thought exist, he came to understand his relative existence, his experiences, and through this to understanding the truth of what it means to be human. He awakened to universal truth, to life, and listening became living. For the next 45 years, he listened and shared what he heard, the Dharma, universal truth. Like Shakyamuni, we need to live our lives. The path to awakening is within every experience, every profession, every situation, if we can learn to stop and listen. Since finishing the Bright Dawn program, I celebrate Bodhi Day by spending 24 hours alone in my finished basement, sitting on a chair with some blankets, allowing thoughts and feelings to wander freely through me. As the sun rises and sets, the room moves from darkness to light to darkness again at its own pace. Flowing between sleep and wakefulness, my body, mind, and spirit dance, learning again and again how to move together as one to the rhythm of life that changes with each thought, each feeling, each experience. All I do is remain still and listen. This is an expression of gratitude to Shakyamuni and all those who came before him so that he could be who he was, and all those who have come since, living and listening and sharing the Dharma. Bodhi Day for me is a time of celebration, of reconciliation and oneness. To all life in which the Dharma lives, I offer my most sincere thanks and deepest gratitude for all that I am and all that I have. Namo Amida Butsu. Namo Amida Butsu. Namo Amida Butsu.
Thank you very much. I think that not very nicely expressed the spirit of Bodhi Day, and making it an individual practice is a tremendous thing. Having a Bodhi Day ritual. There's another lay minister in our program that they communicate through email and so forth, and And they're a resource for each other and support each other after they finish our 2-year lay ministry program. And one of them sent an email regarding Bodhi Day and said, can you share any Bodhi Day stories, or how do you observe Bodhi Day? And by that kind of sharing, you can get ideas for yourself. You say, then so-and-so, somebody's doing this, or they do this, or, And it just raises our awareness and focuses us on Bodhi Day as December 8th, Enlightenment Day, as a religious holiday, observance. And indeed, a lot of temples in Japan and elsewhere, if they're Mahayana tradition. See, Mahayana tradition, the Theravada tradition, I don't really understand this, how the calendar. But for some, the tradition in the Theravadan, the way of the elders, which is Southeast Asian countries, Cambodia, Burma, Thailand, with the saffron-colored robed monks, that tradition, the way of the elders, they wear the same kind of garment that Chakamuni did, they uphold the Pali tradition of language and preserving that tradition, whereas Mahayana more or less tries to interpret and keep the spirit, but not necessarily the literalness of rituals and customs and teachings and so forth. So not that one is better than the other. Huh? Okay, both are beautiful. But in the Theravada tradition, by the calendar, the three major religious holidays of Buddha's birth, his enlightenment, and his death, are all celebrated in one big holiday, or observance, I guess I should say. And in Pali, it's called the Visakha. It's usually based on the lunar calendar, so it varies from year to year, but it's within a week or so, but near the end of May. And Visakha literally means, the fifth month. So all three events are celebrated, one big celebration. Whereas in the Mahayana tradition, Buddha's birth is April 8th. There's three separate times. Different kind of calendar, I guess, somehow. April 8th for celebrating Shakyamuni, Siddhartha Gautama's birth in the Lumbini Garden, his Enlightenment Day, December 8th, and then Nirvana Day, or when he passed away, on February 15th. So three separate observances. So the temples that have the tradition of observing Bodhi Day as a separate on December 8th, a lot of them do have special events, whether it's a service to commemorate it, or if, according to their traditions, they do different things. And in the Zen tradition, they have Rohatsu. They call it Rohatsu. I don't know how to translate that. It's a Japanese term for the so many days before December 8th, Bodhi Day. According to the historical stories of the Buddha's time, he sat for, a week or so under the tree, starting from around December 1st, as it happened, okay, according to calendar aspect of it. And on the morning of December 8th, he had the enlightenment experience, and he met the morning star as it rose in the sky. And he had this, realization came about. And so Rohatsu Sesshin is a concentrated period of sitting, formal Zazen or sitting meditation. And so in a lot of Zen temples, they may observe a week-long intensive sitting period, Rohatsu Sesshin. And somehow also, Bodhi tree is associated with Bodhi Day, and it was the tree that Gautama sat under. I guess it's sometimes called a linden tree, or it's a type of in India, a type of a fig tree, I think. And this whole aspect of this religious observance of Enlightenment Day, you know, when a lot of myself and a lot of families, when in America, Buddhists are very liberal in the sense of, you know, they don't want to necessarily make the children, they assimilate. So Christmas is observed. They go into the, they get a Christmas tree, decorate it, put presents under there, Santa's around. They didn't want their children to be, you know, really different with the other children in the neighborhood and schools, and you know, they celebrate, get into the excitement of the winter holidays when the children are young. And then a lot of Buddhist families, when the children got older, then they stopped doing those things. And in fact, in more recent years, now by recent I mean, you know, 20, 30 years ago, it slowly got started, a Buddhist tradition of having, exchanging Bodhi Day gifts. You know, there was a little bit more awareness of, hey, for Japanese American immigrants, not having to bend over too much backwards to assimilate and you know, not be different and not make trouble and so forth, especially with because of World War II and so forth. But now everything more secure and more assimilation, and they don't have to be isolated so much. So they can safely, you know, assert their own identity and so forth. So have a Bodhi tree instead of a Christmas tree, a linden tree, tannenbaum tree, or and exchange Bodhi Day gifts. And this is very healthy because then it tells young children, hey, be proud of your religious, you know, tradition. And of course, for young children, you make it special. You give gifts, and it really says, hey, we value this religious observance. And I think, you know, just same way Jewish holidays are respected in the school system as religious holidays, okay? And if you lobby and you want it to be observed as a, well, you're going to observe the Christian holidays, and you get day off from school, and the Jewish kids get off. I always thought, hey, we should lobby and get the, you know, the Buddhist kids should get their Buddhist holidays off from school. That's serious business, you know. So anyway, the Bodhi tree as a symbol of a wisdom tree, a lot of temples, you know, had a Bodhi tree. Somehow in their history, somebody grew it, donated it, or whatever. And a lot of temples in California, well, of course, the Bodhi tree, the type of tree it is, it's more tropical. But through good gardening techniques, they could grow in a lot of places. I remember visiting a famous one in Honolulu, in Foster Garden. They have a tree that the program says that this is a descendant of the original tree that the Gautama sat under. I guess cuttings and so forth. You know, it doesn't matter if that's really historically true or not. It's the sentiment, the attitude, the representation of it. What, you know? But it's a nice touch, isn't it? So I would sit under it with a smile. Okay, and a lot of leaves that had fallen on the ground, I picked them up. And then what I did with these leaves, I pressed them. You know, they're still green. I pressed them and preserved them and framed them in not very expensive, you know, plastic frames. But when I put a sky, a blue sky clouds paper in the background, and then I put the picture in there and I framed it, and then I put explanation on the back where it came from, its significance, and then I sometimes would give these out as gifts. Okay, now, I did it, I did this several decades ago, perhaps, but it's showing that somehow involvement in these symbols that we have, and this we're talking, of course, today about Bodhi leaves. Someone gave my dad a Bodhi tree. And it was cultivated. He kept it as a bonsai inside in a pot in his home. And that tree, I don't know how old it must be now. It must be 30, 40 years old. It's a beautiful little bonsai tree. Every December 8th Sunday service commemorating it, I would take that when I was there at the Chicago church. I would take that tree and that bonsai and bring it to the service, prominent place in the front of the altar. And so when people came up to offer incense, the tree's right there. And, of course, bonsai, you know, the trunk gets big, thick, and bonsai is a beautiful art of miniature trees. And after my parents passed away, my sister and my sister's husband is he's very knowledgeable, and he knows how to take care of bonsai. So when I visit them, their place, I always make a point to take a look at that Bodhi tree. And it's thriving. It's beautiful. I see, he knows how to prune it and everything, keeps it healthy. Every once in a while when the roots get too much in the shallow bonsai pot, it's more like a tray, shallow tray, you got to take it and trim off the roots and then, you got to know how to take care of it. The Fresno temple here, about a half an hour, 45 minutes drive away, they have a huge Bodhi tree. It must be 50 feet high, and it's huge. And it drops a lot of seeds and everything. I tried to grow, get the seeds to germinate, and tried all kind of things. And my good friend Phil in Chicago, who was able to get some Bodhi seeds some years ago, and he was able to germinate them and grow them in little pots. They would give them out. So I knew he knew about it, and so I asked him if he could get the seeds, but the source that he got the seeds from, he can't get them anymore. So I sent him a lot of these seeds from the Fresno tree, but he couldn't get them to germinate either. And we had a nice time sort of over a several-year period of, doing different things to try to get these seeds to germinate, but we haven't had any luck so far. I thought it'd be nice to try to grow some Bodhi trees on our property. And maybe one last thing I'd like to mention is, our Bright Dawn Center logo is a Bodhi leaf with the sunrise in the middle of the Bodhi leaf shape. And Adrian's niece, who made a spiritual pilgrimage to India when she was younger and young adult, and before, I think it was an extended, maybe over a year period traveling, and she had gotten a leaf from at the Enlightenment site in Bodhi Gaya, in India, and picked up a leaf from the ground, and she used that exact shape when we asked her to make a graphic, because she had a graphic designer background, and she made our logo using the leaf shape that she had from the leaf from. Because they also, at the Enlightenment spot in India, where Gautama sat, they have made that into a religious site, and they have in the tree there, that's presumably the cuttings from the original, and carried on, and there's a fence around it, and they treat that as a sacred tree. So that's a nice history or background where our logo comes from, and the meaning and significance of it. So all these kinds of thoughts I have on Bodhi Day. That's all for today's broadcast. Till next time, you keep going. And, of course, you have a very beautiful Bodhi Day observation. Observance, I should say. Thank you very much.